Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Confessions of a Dangerous Lord by Elisa Braden. Narrated by Mary Sarah. Chapter 1. We all have hidden depths, dear boy. The question is whether those depths conceal treasure or monsters. The Dowager Marchioness of Wallingham to Lord Dunstan at said gentleman's annual hunt. March 15, 1819, London. Most men saw poorly in the dark. Sabre was not most men. Call it breeding or training or random fortune, but an alley beneath London's cold-choked sky posed no greater hardship to his eyes than a candlelit ballroom. Less, perhaps. Here at least the vermin did not bother with disguises, which was why the rat caught his notice. It gnawed something boot-shaped and motionless.
"Like bleeding pitch,"
muttered Drayton, a looming wolfhound at Sabre's side.
"Should have brought a light."
The Bow Street runner had left the lantern with the coachman two streets over, fearing their contact would balk it being seen. That assessment might have been correct, had their contact still been breathing. He glanced again at the rodent's furtive form, heard the whisk of rodent feet, the squeak of rodent teeth on cheap leather. It knew what was becoming obvious, if only from the odour floating beneath the stench of human refuse and animal waste.
"Return to the coach."
Sabre's grim order straightened Drayton out of his habitual hunch.
"He's a mite late, I'll grant. But he's the first source we've had in seven..." "Late, yes. As in the late, Mr. Chalmers. Fetch the lantern."
He moved deeper into the dark, toward the rat's feast.
"Be swift now."
Behind him, Drayton groaned.
"Ah, bloody bleeding hell!"
Sabre crouched beside the corpse as Drayton's loping clomps receded. The rat flew with one hand's impatient swipe. The tang of blood entered his nose. Three alcoves and two piles of rubbish in this alley. An attacker would have little trouble hiding long enough to dispatch a craven mouse like Chalmers. Sabre had warned him a public location was best. Instead, the mouse had insisted on this narrow spot between back doors and brick, far from the green glow of gaslights in more respectable parts of the city. Stupidity had killed him, as it had many who entered the investor's sphere. Sabre searched the man's coat, rough wool suited to his recent poverty, and found only a gilt brass watch, a wadded handkerchief, and a ruined pouch of snuff. He tossed them all aside with a curse. This had been a fool's errand, ending in yet another fool dead. After more than a decade chasing the investor like a hound hunting smoke, Sabre should have known better. But leads were few in this particular hunt, and consequently more tempting. One breath before he attempted to rise, he felt the prickle, heard the thwick of metal leaving a sheath. Spinning low away from the sound, he sprang from his crouch, withdrew his own dagger from the scabbard at his hip, sliced upward in one ghostly motion, caught cloth and shadow, but no flesh. Heart slowed, eyes sharpened. By contrast, the shadow breathed fast, probably surprised by his quickness. Rats who inhabited the dark often were. Sabre grinned, bouncing lightly on his toes. The long knife's ebony grip cradled in his palm like a woman's breast, warm and sweet, familiar.
"You should have contented yourself with Mr. Chalmers," he hissed. "Your employer's name, if you please."
The shadow stilled. A blade shone in the meagre light from windows along the adjacent street. The assassin must have wiped his weapon clean after withdrawing it from Chalmers' kidney.
"Come now,"
Sabre chided, slowly circling, dancing, waiting.
"Few men desire an excruciating death over a swift one. Surely you are not among them. You're him."
The shadow's voice trembled and broke.
"Him? The Sabre?"
Sabre tissed again.
"Dreadful moniker."
He held up his knife, tossing it with a practiced spin. He liked the way it caught the light before returning home to his hand.
"Inaccurate, as you can see. Well, perhaps you cannot, dark as it is. Knives are my preference, portable, efficient."
He nodded toward Chalmers.
"I note your fondness for them as well.
The Shadow's greatcoat shrugged nervously.
Hardly that. I'm only doing what I must.
His accent was warbling and odd. Part Manchester, part Dublin, if you didn't miss his guess. And young. Too young. Sabre slowly circled, drawing the man's back around to face the street. Drayton would return soon. Better to catch the Shadow by surprise.
Your employer, old chap. Do let's be reasonable. Gutting a man produces hideous stains. Removing them is tiresome. Do not force me to it. Horatio Cider. Nonsense. Cider has been dead for nearly 2 years.
The Shadow stilled.
His name yet lives.
Sabre inched closer, disguising his manoeuvre inside a dance from front foot to back, front to back, front to back. Light and smooth, shifting and deceptive. They should have called him Dancer, or Dagger, or something other than a weapon he'd rarely used. He did not even possess one at present. Nevertheless, he was known as the Sabre, for reasons he preferred to forget.
I watched that butcher's blood soak an entire room, old chap. He is quite dead, I assure you.
No answer. Sabre sighed.
Very well. How were you contacted?
A long pause, rough breaths, a twitch of the Shadow's knife. His blade was several inches shorter than Sabre's, duller and cheaper.
My wife was given a letter. By whom?
Front foot, back foot.
Front, back. I don't know.
The Shadow's arm swiped a sweating brow.
A lad, she said. Cider was the only name given. And you did not bother to question a letter from a dead man.
The Shadow's fist clutched his knife reflexively.
Stop moving like that.
Sabre smiled, half amused at the young man's frustration, half sick at what was coming.
There was a threat to your wife, yes? A few quid if you performed your task, her death if you did not.
Another pause.
Aye.
The investor understood incentives better than most. This assassin was merely a tool to be used and discarded, and sending the trail back to his true employer would prove fruitless. If Sabre had learned anything, he had learned that. Still, perhaps he could spare the man the fate of all the others.
You could flee. Take your wife to Dublin. Manchester.
The Shadow's greatcoat shook visibly.
I cannot.
Sabre went colder.
I have no wish to kill you, old chap. Run. Do it now.
He did not run. Instead, he repeated in a whisper.
I cannot.
Then he attacked, lunged and thrust with that short, dull blade. Desperate, inexpert jabs. Once. Again. Sabre danced away, first to his right, then backward, so the Shadow had only air to puncture.
How may I persuade you? Run, for the love of God, man!
Heavy breathing, and another swipe, close this time.
The babe is coming soon. I've told you, I cannot.
Going still, Sabre felt old rage rising. Pure bloody evil, that's what this was. The investor would use anyone. A half-Irish boy who couldn't afford a decent knife. A woman who did nothing more sinister than accept a lad's delivery. A babe who had not yet taken a breath.
I shall help you. Get you all to safety.
Sabre didn't know where the offer had come from. As a rule, he eschewed sentiment. With enemies such as Cider and the investor, soft meant dead. Worse, it meant death for anyone cherished in close. A wife, a babe. Which was why he had neither. Despite a temptation of the utmost extremity.
You cannot help me,
the Shadow said.
He finds the one he hires. Always. I kill you, or she dies. That simple.
Sabre knew it was true, but the boy did not have to die tonight, not by his hand.
Take my offer,
he pleaded.
Give yourself a chance.
The Shadow's answer was a sudden lurch right, a high stroke aimed at Sabre's neck. Sabre pivoted to avoid the slash, but it came too quickly. His forearm caught the worst of it, folded up beside his jaw to guard his head. The blade dug through wool and linen, gashed skin and muscle in a streak of fire. His hand didn't think, It was deadly and automatic, carrying his dagger up through the shadow's belly into the shadow's heart. The motion dispatched the threat, killing a half-Irish boy with a warbling accent and an expecting wife.
Ah, God!
The boy's words were wet. Bloody. He hung on Sabre a moment, staggered backward, his boots slipping in something wretched, his body falling, dying, sprawling wide. His chest went motionless within seconds. The gurgling stopped, leaving a shattering silence. Light came, golden and dancing toward Sabre, but he didn't want to see. He turned instead to face brick walls and piled refuse. A stack of discarded broken crates, a heap of food scraps, a rat returning from his meal. Light expanded as footfalls drew near. First fast, then slow. Drayton had returned. Too late. Too late. Too late. No saving anybody now.
Bloody bleeding hell!
Gold rocked wildly, then stilled into a pool amid long shadows as Drayton placed the lantern on the ground near the boy's outstretched hand.
It's Boyle!
Sabre turned, keeping his eyes upon Drayton, who knelt beside the assassin's blue greatcoat. It splayed out like wings upon the ground.
You know him?
The man who resembled a wolfhound, dark and unkempt, shrewd and loyal, shot Sabre an outraged glance over his shoulder.
He's a Bow Street man. One of yours?
Drayton scratched his unshaven chin.
Nah, horse patrol. But I've seen him before. Christ, only been at Bow Street a year.
So, the investor was drawing closer. Previous assassins had been low men, ruffians and thieves primarily. Easily persuaded to kill, easily controlled by a bit of blunt. But a Bow Street runner was an entirely different matter. Close.
Too damned close.
Drayton flicked the tip of the boy's blade with his boot, setting it to spin in place. He grunted as he pushed to his feet.
You hadn't any choice.
Sabre glanced at his long knife, still streaked with blood. Moving a few steps away, he bent and wiped it clean on Chalmers' coat. Before returning it to the scabbard on his hip.
Perhaps I did. Nah, Boyle was a mite green, but he could handle himself fine. I'd wager he was given no option. Neither were you. His widow and babe might disagree.
Drayton's eyes flashed, that houndish face scowling.
Now listen here. We're hunting a bleeding monster. It ain't your doing. The investor is no more within my grasp than he was 2 years ago, or 10. I'm hunting smoke, Drayton. Every time I catch its scent, my hands come away both empty and burnt.
The wolfhound wagged a long chin toward Sabre's left arm.
Appears cut to me. Best wrap that.
Sabre gave his own forearm a cursory glance. His sleeve was soaked. His hand was slick and weak. Throbbing pain grew with each passing heartbeat, echoing up his shoulder and neck.
Were there papers with Chalmers?
Drayton asked. Sabre shook his head, sighing and rubbing a forefinger along his brow.
He may have left them behind, if he ever had any at all. Who the devil knows? The man went from being a solicitor to hiding in his brother's cellar. Clearly he was terrified. I assume with his ties to Cider, he must have something that would point to the investor. Something. Perhaps he was lying. Can scarcely blame him for that.
Drayton paced to the former solicitor's boots and tapped Chalmers' heel lightly.
Must have known he would end here, I reckon. You were his best chance for sanctuary. He was stupid. Had he done as I instructed, he would be alive.
Sabre's eyes drifted to Boyle, saw the pale open hand, the dull knife, and the black-red pool spreading beneath both. He swallowed. He hadn't vomited since his first kill. A Frenchman who'd fancy Napoleon a god rather than a tyrant. Young like Boyle, only a shave or two past 20. Strange to think Sabre had been a similar age at the time.
We all die the same, don't we? Paris or Dublin, boy or man.
After more than a decade, the price of Sabre's long, relentless hunt could be measured in blood. He looked down. Saw his own hand dripping red onto the watch from Chalmers' pocket. It lay where he had tossed it, the sole remnant of a solicitor's comforts. He bent and plucked it up, his thumb smearing the engraved surface. Red tarnished the brass, settled into the engravings. Chalmers had held this, kept it close like a talisman. Sabre understood, for he held a talisman of his own. Or rather, she held him. Once again he ran his thumb over the watch's surface. Then he tucked it into his coat pocket, eyed the carnage of battle, felt the fire of the Dubliner's cut. And not for the first time. He considered whether the price of vanquishing a monster had grown too high.
Chapter 2. The purpose of the season is to attract suitors. The purpose of attracting suitors is to acquire a husband. If you wish to be amused, I suggest acquiring a dog. The Dowager Marchioness of Wellingham to Lady Maureen Huxley regarding said lady's recent loss of composure in the face of Lord Dunstan's provocations. March 20, 1819. Mayfair. Maureen's downfall began during an otherwise sedate quadrille. She was spinning to a stop on the fourth figure of Le Pantalon. Henry, the dastardly devil, stood across from her, waggling his brows like a madman. That was what did it. She bent double, covering helpless giggling snorts with one gloved hand, while the first couple advanced and retreated between them. Although she was part of the second couple, she could not complete le tir. Laughter had possessed her with maniacal force. Violins continued their spirited accompaniment as she gasped rudely and held her middle. Oh, good heavens, she could not stop. How mortifying! She glanced across the bewildered spinning couples to the imp who had prodded her with silly faces and pointed stares at Lord Burnley's prominent backside. Henry grinned back, his handsome features wreathed in wicked satisfaction. He had wanted this, blast him. Yet even knowing it was true, knowing that her partner for the quadrille, Mr. Hastings, must think her positively mad, she could not stifle herself. A convulsive hum of laughter escaped her fingers. Her eyes watered. Her ribs ached. Stop. She must stop. But the memory of Burnley's bum waddling like a drunken duck, each time he bounced from one foot to the next, flopping the tails of his coat like a pair of black wings, was simply too much to bear. She could not catch her breath. Turning her back to the other dancers to face the wall of Lady Hostoke's drawing-room, she squeezed her waist harder and straightened. She held her breath. Perhaps she would suffocate and be spared the indignity of this moment.
"Bit of a cough. Not to worry. Carry on,"
Henry called to the other dancers before a masculine hand cupped her lower back brazenly. One might even say possessively, if one were fanciful.
"God, Henry," she chirped through her fingers. "If you dare speak to me right now, I shall strike you."
Let me guess, the devil purred in her ear. "With Lord Burnley's chair. I wager it would deliver a thrashing unmatched by seats of, shall we say, lesser proportions."
"Oh, no."
Here it came again, bursting from her like champagne from a shaken bottle. Henry's steady hand steered her through the throng of appalled peers and matrons. At least she assumed they were appalled. Tears streamed down her cheeks now. Perhaps the moisture would cool them, for she felt the prickling heat of the Huxley flush. She was a Huxley. Therefore, her cheeks stained red at the slightest provocation. And there was no greater provocation than Henry Thorpe, the Earl of Dunstan. He ushered her out of the crowd into a dark panelled corridor. She collapsed against a wall and covered her hot face before releasing a groan.
"Henry, what have you done? You left your partner stranded. Poor Miss Andrews. Oh, and poor Mr. Hastings."
"There, there, pet."
White gloved fingers dangled a white square in her vision.
"I am certain Hastings will understand. Lord Burnley's pantalon was breathtaking."
Another giggle escaped. This time she bit her lips between her teeth. She would not start laughing again. She would control herself. Dash it all. Dabbing her cheeks with Henry's offering, she rolled against the wall until she could see him again. The imp. He was her friend, although at one time she'd been certain he would be more. Presently, his insouciance was vexing. He grinned down at her,
white teeth flashing in the low light of the tapers behind him. Full of distracting wit, Henry's masculine beauty was easily overlooked, but he was heart-meltingly handsome. Brown hair shone with hints of auburn, a high-bridged, refined nose scented proportionate features. Dancing eyes beckoned one closer, if only to see how dark the colour blue could be. Full smiling lips made a woman picture all the wicked things he might do for hours, even days, if one were the object of his desire. Maureen was not such an object, of course. He'd taken pains to convey the message gently, but convey it he had. Now she tore herself from the beauty of his mouth to sigh and narrow her eyes upon his.
"I should pummel you," she gritted. "Have you any idea how long I have waited for Mr. Hastings to approach me?"
"Since you discovered his grandfather's proximity to the hereafter?"
3 weeks, and my interest is not in his title, you devil."
"Of course not. Must be the hair."
"Mr. Hastings is quite handsome. A broad forehead gives a man an academic air. I find him most appealing."
Broad. Yes. I'm having a bit of trouble with the academic part of your description, however."
She stamped her foot. "Stop being such an aggravation. He may not have your wit, but he is not dim. He attended Cambridge."
A snort. "Precisely.
Besides, many ladies regard a bit of thinning as rather distinguished. I happen to be one."
"Thinning? At this rate, he'll be entirely bald by 30.
He arched a brow.
"Perhaps wigs will become fashionable again, and he may spare us the full glare of his rapier intellect."
Leaning back against the panelled wall, she briefly closed her eyes, a familiar ache shuddering in her chest. This was not laughter. This was despair, and had become a constant companion over the past 2 seasons. She opened her eyes to find Henry staring down at her.
"I must marry someone," she whispered. "Mr. Hastings is..."
A muscle ticked in his lean jaw. "Not right for you."
"I fear some of us must accept our limitations."
Eyes flaring, raking her face and throat in a way that made her swallow, Henry cocked his head and gave her a faint grin.
"What limitations would those be, pet?"
"After 3 seasons, I have no offers."
He said nothing. "Something is obviously wrong with me, Henry."
"Don't be silly. You are perfect."
"Really?"
"Of course."
"Then explain my failure. Men approach me. They appear to find me pleasing."
"Naturally."
"And then," she gave a flailing, forlorn shrug, "they disappear. No more dances, no more drives in their phaetons, no more lovely chats or even the mildest flirtation. I have not been kissed in ages."
His smile faded. He retreated a step.
"No," she said, pushing away from the wall. "Answer me, if you please."
He glanced left then right, giving a polite nod to a white-haired gentleman travelling from the billiard room to the drawing room.
"What do you wish me to say?"
he murmured.
"I have tried everything."
She hated the way her voice contorted. Henry was ever the polished wit. She'd rarely seen him overcome by any emotion stronger than exasperation. Heaven forfend he should suffer a wounded heart's despair, as she had.
"Define everything."
His words were hard, his jaw once again flexing, though his eyes remained turned toward the billiard room. She warded his handkerchief, then smoothed it between her palms. Truthfully, she would prefer not to reveal all she had done to improve herself. The magnitude of her efforts was embarrassing.
"All I have ever desired is to fall in love, to marry a good man, and have a home, and children," she chuckled. "Many children. What else would you expect from a Huxley girl?"
Finally, his gaze returned to her, heated and strange. He did not smile fondly, or utter a charming quip. He said nothing at all, staring down at her and gritting his teeth. Her confidences were obviously causing him discomfort. Although they had been friends for nearly 2 years, and their families acquainted for longer, Henry avoided conversations of this sort, intimate and plain, in favour of lighter subjects and droll banter. However, given that he had spoiled her chances with Mr. Hastings, she felt little remorse. Let him be uncomfortable. She needed answers. Something about me repels gentlemen's interest. Firmly she held his gaze. I have searched for the cause. I asked my sisters, Mama and Papa. I even asked John what it could be. Her brother had turned crimson before stammering that he was not in a position to judge the womanly appeal of his sister. Henry's brows arched.
His response?
He fled the room as though I had threatened to set his waistcoat ablaze.
Sensible decision.
Henry indicated his own waistcoat with a casual stroke of his finger. It was ornate gold silk, the pride of his expansive collection. He tended to wear it on more formal occasions.
We are not heathens, after all.
She snorted. He grinned. For a moment she remembered why she'd once thought they would share far more than friendship. But that was years ago. Two, to be precise. Drawing a deep breath, she sallied onward. Cease distracting me. I require your advice if I am to succeed in my aim.
Landing Hastings?
Or another suitable gentleman. I must determine what is wrong with me and repair it forthwith. Three seasons constitute an acceptable time frame for a lady in my position. Four would invite pity. He sighed.
Why me, pet?
She raised her chin. We are friends, are we not?
Certainly.
Caution made the word sound like a question. And you are a man.
You noticed? I am honoured.
As a man? One who might have once looked upon me with some admiration? She swallowed as he gave no response, not even a blink. I wish to know what caused your interest to wane. Was it my gowns? She brushed a hand down the layered canary silk of her skirt. My hair? She touched the curls at her temple. My insistence on discussing Capability Brown's use of Serpentine Lakes in his landscape improvements? Finally, a smile.
None of those. You are lovely. Despite your affection for Mr. Brown's work. A glorified gardener, that one. Any fool can dam a stream and plant a bit of grass.
Henry.
Beg your pardon, pet. Do go on.
I have no more guesses. It cannot be my scent. I have visited florists numerous times, and the perfumer has attested that, while I might change my scent, there is little to improve upon.
Has he now?
Yes. Furthermore, I have purchased outrageous quantities of honey vanilla soap, violet tooth powder, orange flower hair rinse, and rose milk cold cream. It is more than Papa can bear. He recently set a new budget, and he is earnest in its limitations.
I can imagine.
Still, I bathe quite frequently, more so than other young ladies. I am most fond of it. Henry cleared his throat and rubbed at the corner of his mouth.
Bathing?
She nodded. Not the sort with a washstanding cloth, mind you. No, no. Full immersion. It is a dreadful look to falling water, and I must bribe the footman regularly. But I adore the sensations of heat and wetness and steam surrounding me. Could anything be more pleasurable? Again he was silent, his thumb stroking oddly at the edge of his lower lip. She shook her head. In any event, I have determined, after much introspection and experimentation, that my odour is not offensive, and therefore not the cause of my problem.
I should think not.
His voice had gone hoarse, and once again he avoided her eyes. His gaze now hovered between her throat and midsection. If she didn't know better, she would suspect he was admiring her bosom. Men often did, but not Henry. First of all, it was too dark in the corridor for him to see her properly, even if he were so inclined. Second, he was not so inclined. In fact, he did not regard her as a woman worthy of ogling. His affection was more brotherly, perhaps. No, that wasn't quite right either. He and John were acres apart in their disposition toward her. Dash it all, she did not know how he regarded her. Affectionately, warmly, humorously, yes. They enjoyed one another to an absurd degree. No one made her laugh like Henry. And yet, whatever her feelings for him, his were strictly platonic. I chatter too much, don't I? She blurted, ashamed to utter her darkest suspicion. but sensing she must force both herself and Henry to tend the matter at hand, her inability to hold a man's interest.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?